My name is Ryan Hay. I'm Citigroup's technology sector specialist. I'm pleased to have Robert Halliday with me today, Applied Materials CFO. I think the format, what we'll do is I'll kick it off with some questions and get it going. And then at some point I'll stop and pause and we'll poll the audience to see if there's any Q&A, and if not, I can keep going. So I think, thanks for coming today, Rob. I appreciate it. Let's start off, I think, maybe just with your wafer outlook. And, you know, I know in your July Q earnings call, you updated your 2015 outlook and forecast to flat with downside risk. If wafer spending's flat this year, could AMAT still see mid-single-digit top-line growth in 15? And then further, what would drive growth for AMAT? Where do you see wafer trending for next year in 16?
Sure. What we said in our call about a month ago was that we thought this year was about flat with 14, slight bit of risk on the downside, we thought. We thought that we didn't think foundry was as strong as we thought earlier in the year. We thought NAND has been strong, DRAM's been pretty good, but foundry not quite as good.
Right.
If it holds, then we'll have up revenues this year. If you go look at our revenues, we've gained about 4.5 points, I think, in DRAM share, about 4 or 4.5 points in maybe more NAND share. Foundry, we're holding pretty well. And our highest share traditionally has been foundry. But if you look at NAND and split it between 2D and 3D,
yeah,
our share in 3D NAND is now actually pretty close to our foundry share. So there is revenue growth opportunities there, and it's happening. The products particularly that are doing well are places like Etch, CVD. Then we have a new product, the LD product we announced, which hasn't contributed to revenues this year, but will in the next couple of years.
Okay.
Then in non-equipment, our services business is up a lot this year. We'll do over $2.5 billion this year. We did $2 billion 2 years ago, about $2.2 last year. Okay. So the revenue line's doing okay. Display's up this year.
Okay. Maybe if we start with then foundry spending.
Sure.
And 10 nanometer. I know that you're obviously expecting a decline for the remainder of the year with the pause in capacity additions, and also you saw some cancellations recently. Can you talk about what's driving this weakness?
Sure. I'll tell you what, we see things and the rest we speculate a little bit.
Yeah.
In our Q4 guidance for October quarter ended, we thought we'd have several hundred million more of foundry than ended up in the guidance. What happened was that there was over $80 million in backlog that got canceled from a foundry.
Okay.
And then the other foundry orders that we expected, we don't see those happening.
Okay.
So it goes to what you said at the beginning, which foundry in the second half is not quite as strong.
Right.
So if you go look at what's driving the bust the last number of years for the industry, remember, companies like Applied, we help add capacity, add surface area. So wafer stock growth is good for us, and number of layers on the wafer is good for us, because we add surface area, right? So if you look at what's been adding a lot of surface area the last number of years, it's mobile devices, phones and iPads. PCs haven't been growing too much. So phones, smartphone growth, unit growth was up about 28% in 14. In 15, we think it's probably about 13%. So the rate of growth is somewhat off. Now the big question is, what is the rate of growth in smartphones for 2016, okay? Because
right,
if you look at the memory stuff, and I'll do that deeper dive, it looks pretty good. So then you go to logic foundry, phones have been the big driver. Now the other things that contribute to the growth have been, will contribute more over time. Big data and sensors are starting to pick up more and more. So if you look at the memory stuff, underlying that is some of the big data stuff. The other thing is sensor, although they are small devices and not a million layers, they're growing very rapidly. So if you go look at our service business, one of the reasons it's up is we have 200 millimeter tools in service, and those are up a lot this year because there's a high rate of growth in sensors, whether it be in your phone or in automobiles. And so this Internet of Things, sensors is growing a fair amount. So those are kind of supplementing growth and probably have higher than average growth rate over the next few years. But they're not as big as things like mobile. So going back to the driver on mobile, mobile devices are taking more steps and more layers to produce. So if the growth in unit phones is pretty good, the fact that the number of layers is going up is positive. Right. So you can offset a little bit slower growth rate in phone unit growth because there's more layers, takes longer to do.
Sure.
So the big question is, what is phone growth next year? Yeah. That'll help you figure out smartphones. Now, the other thing that'll help you independent of phone unit growth next year is they're kind of on a tick-tock on these nodal shrinks. It's sort of like 20 nanometer was where they changed the back end at a big foundry, and then they changed the transistor at 16. And so they tend to buy a little bit heavier at that two nodal switch at the first part. So at 10 nanometer, they're probably going to change the back end. So the spending across 10 and 7 might be front-end loaded between the two nodes next year. So the things that help you next year are a little bit this weighting of spending, more layers on the device. The thing that you have to then get to is if phone growth is okay, you're in good shape. That's foundry. Then if you go to memory, VNAND, it's hard to be other than pretty optimistic. If you go look at NAND, there's a big conversion going on, as most of you know, from 2D flat planar NAND to three-dimensional NAND. They're going to have to make that switch for a couple of reasons. One, the 3D device works better, so their customers like them quite a bit.
Right.
Two, the technology and cost curves on 2D are getting really tough. So 3D is going to happen. So there's about 1.3 million wafer starts in the world of NAND capacity. By the end of this year, you'll have converted about 150,000 of those to 3D, or you'll have 150 of 3D capacity. We think it could double next year, so add 150 next year. Whereas this year, they've added about 80,000 wafer starts. So we think NAND spending's up next year about 10%. This year, it's kind of about $7.5 billion. DRAM, we think, is down some next year, but not as big as, like, DataQuest says. DataQuest says it's down more than we do. We're sort of in the 10% down a little bit, but still pretty good year because this year was up. So the wild card a little bit is smartphones.
Right. Maybe staying with that, given that foundries have used the same interconnect scheme across 20 and 16 nanometer with most of the incremental changes around the transistor, to what extent has AMAT's reuse rate being impacted? And maybe could you touch on just what makes 10 nanometer different from 16 nanometer in terms of reuse rate?
Sure. Sorry, I have hay fever.
Sure.
So this year, we probably were, I think the whole industry was a little bit surprised by the amount of reuse. So reuse is a function of three things. One, do they have some underutilized tools that you don't quite know? Two, do they increase the yield on the tools they are using so that the effective output is better?
Right.
And three, is the match of tools node to node similar so that you can use the same tool for the next node, which is your question,
yeah.
Preston, Ryan. So if you go look at your third question, there wasn't a change in the interconnect layer from 20 to 16. There will be a change at 16 to 10.
Okay.
So... Well, that's what we're predicting. And so reuse will be significant, but maybe not as significant for that factor. The first factor, which I alluded to, is capacity. I think there was probably a little bit underutilized tool capacity that we underestimated.
Yeah.
And probably if you go look at the leading edge foundries, the biggest customer going to the leading edge tends to be Apple, right?
Sure.
So Apple has been moving their requirements around. At 28 nanometer was one foundry,
yeah.
20 nanometer was another foundry, 16, 14 kind of split. So our customers are trying to manage their capacity to Apple too, I think.
Makes
so
sense.
That created a little bit of disconnect. And the third one is customers wanted to yield their first FinFET device at 16, 14 very well, and they wanted to do a great job ramping for their big customer at 20. So they probably bought to do a great job.
Right.
And as they improve yields, they got better output.
Okay.
So if you go look at our service business is up this year partly because tool utilization is very high. So with increasing yield, tools are kind of underutilized, more fully utilized in the actual utilization of the tools in production going up, which you can see that in our service business, they got more effective tool utilization this year. We think we're through most of that this year. So that's not quite the draft down this year.
Okay. I think maybe just on timing, obviously one specific customer pushed out 10 nanometer. Do you expect similar from other foundries from 10 nanometer? And then similarly with 7 nanometer, do you see any challenges or changes to that timeline?
So you got to look at the end device. So this is kind of the Moore's Law question, yeah. Right? So one big logic company kind of pushed out, but I believe they have the technology capability to do it, right? Sure. So I don't think it's a technology issue. Yeah. I think it's, do they need it now? Manage your CapEx, manage yields. Sure. And that's a good. Those are good things to manage.
Right.
But if you go to the foundry customers, they are competing very aggressively for their biggest customers to have a 10 nanometer device, so one, they win the share, and two, that customer is on an annual product cycle. Their customer's customer, mm-hmm. around smartphones, mobile,
yep.
whereas the big logic customer's not on an annual cycle on products, really. So I don't think that the foundries are gonna slow down on 10. I think, if anything, they'll go as aggressively as ever.
Okay. Internet of Things, I think, is a pretty common, buzzword, and it typically, utilizes a lagging edge technology, I would think. How do you see that impacting the foundry opportunity longer term?
Yeah, the Internet of Things is going up a fair amount. So where do I think the world's going? I think that companies will eventually use sensor devices extensively to predict what you're going to purchase, how you're going to behave, and your health care. So Internet of Things around sensors, I think, is going to grow. If you look at the data, it's going to grow very, very fast, right?
Yeah.
Once companies or merchants or governments or healthcare providers have data, they have to do data analytics and crack the data, so large-scale data analytics, once you get the sensors.
Right.
So I think the big data thing's going to grow a lot. So I think both those things will grow quite a bit. Those sensors are mostly made on 200 millimeter devices today.
Okay.
So if you go look at it, our sales of 200 millimeter tools, as I said earlier, have gone up quite a bit. I think that growth rate just continues to grow. Now, for equipment companies like ourselves, it's a good thing.
Right.
It hasn't moved the needle as big as it will, because those sensors tend to be simple devices with not a lot of layers.
Sure.
But as they grow in volume, complexity, that'll help. And eventually, some of them will go to 300 millimeter
sure.
tools.
Okay. Maybe we can switch over to DRAM. You touched on it before. And then after that, maybe we'll switch to see if there's any questions from the audience. But just DRAM oversupply concerns. Spending, as you said, expected to be up 20% year over year. Was more first half weighted, obviously, this year. Continues to pressure pricing in the second half. With Micron and Hynix both hinting to memory spending plans for next year, what's the risk of a prolonged DRAM industry downturn, and how far do you think DRAM makers can shrink existing DRAM device architecture?
Well, a couple of things there. One, most of our customers, I think, manage their capital budgets pretty well. And one of the techniques, they have a couple of techniques for managing it. One is they make multiple types of devices. If you look at Samsung, they make DRAM, NAND, and foundry devices.
Yeah.
If you look at Micron, it's DRAM and NAND. Hynix, similar.
Sure.
And then if you go to TSMC, foundry, but they manage their portfolio through multiple customers, right? And then they manage it through, they don't do ballrooms now. They build out the fab in multiple pieces,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, I think they'll balance their spending. My guess is they'll be a little bit more weighted on NAND earlier in the year, DRAM later in the year, because they'll manage their spending. Because the NAND spending is more obvious to them. One, I think the growth in NAND will be pretty good, but they have to make this technology transition from 2D to 3D that's going to take a fair amount of capital dollars.
Right.
So then I think they'll take their total capital budget and spend heavier on NAND than DRAM in the beginning of the year. So I think the DRAM thing, even though I say it's only down about 10% next year,
right.
I think it's more second half is my guess.
Okay. we could just take does anyone have any questions at this time?
I'd like to give the audience a little bit of a wake up humor, right? So a lot of people say, we read your body language, Bob, and geez, you look happy or sad or whatever. My body language today, you might say, Bob looked painful. It's because it's not about WFE. I had my two sons up on the Cape over the weekend, and they convinced me to go water skiing for the first time in 10 years. and they gun the boat. And I have got the worst pulled hamstring, so my painful expression is not around DRAM. So don't read too much into it. It's about a pulled hamstring. So go ahead, Ryan.
That's a good point. All right, maybe switch into 3D. Oh, we have a question?
Yeah. Thanks. How you doing? Just a question about share gains against Lam Research. You know, before you came into Applied, Lam had a pretty good tailwind behind them for a really long time. Some of that's continued. Can you help us think about, from an overall portfolio perspective, how you've pivoted the company since you got there to mediate that a little bit better, and then, you know, on a go-forward basis, take, let's say, either 3D NAND or Foundry, and maybe you could, from a portfolio of product perspective, can you give us why you guys are best positioned to win from growth in that spending category relative to any of your peers, not just Lam? So I guess two-part question.
That could be a two-day lecture series. Try and do it at 7 minutes or less. Gary Dickerson and myself, we joined Applied in sort of 2012 or 13. And when we looked at the company, we said, you know, the company was in solar equipment, semi, display equipment, and services. Solar, so the first thing you do is, what's the market like? So the way you make money is three ways, right? Are you competing in attractive markets? Can you win those attractive markets with disruptive products at 3D of scale to make money, right? So the market, solar was a terrible market, so we cut it pretty hard. We're going to continue to be very conservative at the end game on that one. So that we took out about $200 million of cost. The second one is semi. We thought that the semi market was attractive. We thought it was going to be less cyclical and it was going to grow, because what you're seeing is that it was always about make it smaller, make it better, makes it better, faster, cheaper. But they're going to put more layers in. If you go look at where we compete, 53.5% of WFE spending in 2012 was on where we compete, deposition, etch, and other stuff, epi, all that stuff. I'm putting deposition broadly. It's up to about 59% this year. So where we compete was pretty good in equipment, but we were underrepresented in certain products. We could see the V-NAND thing coming, the FinFET thing coming, eventually changes to DRAM. We weren't strong enough in ALD, because the company didn't have a product. We weren't strong enough in etch, and CVD needed a little work. You know, epi very strong, PVD strong, implant strong. So we had to get better products there. And you could see the products, there was a couple of problems, right? So we put money into those products. You go look at our R&D spending went up. We had to find the money. We took $200 million out of G&A. We cut about 27%, right? We put the money into etch, ALD, some CVD products. And we're getting the revenue growth. So if you look at it, we were 9.5% or something like that share in etch in 2012. Last year, we were about 17%. So we're up to about 7.5 points. We think we'll probably go up next couple of years. In etch, we came out with a new chamber, the SIM3 chamber. It's got better uniformity across the wafer. We used to have non-symmetrical pumping. It didn't work. The different chips on different sides, right? And then we got better. The chamber is better in terms of conductance too, right? So it's a good chamber. So now we're adding apps people. We doubled the number of apps people in the field too. So we're gaining share. ALD, we announced a new product. We'll have 50 chambers shipped by the end of the year. And the SIM3 chamber will have over 400 chambers shipped by the end of January. We just introduced it 4 quarters ago. So we're doing okay there. So what we do, we said, we looked at the market, we pivoted towards that, and we're getting some revenue growth. On display, we thought the business was pretty good. We got some new products. We doubled the size of the addressable market. We have new products. And one new product we have now this year, our encapsulation tool, we got $200 million in orders, right? So we got that. And then service, we said, hey, this is a really good opportunity for growth and cash, because it's kind of a high-risk business. You're selling parts to your own tools. The business got down to $2 billion, was kind of flat through 2013. So we'll do about 2550 this year. We're getting a higher capture rate. So that's what we did. So vis-a-vis our competitors, I think Lam lives in a good place too. Etch and deposition, CVD is a good place to live, because customers are depositing more layers and etching out. V-NAND's a 32-layer stack, or 24, 32, 48. You're putting down more layers, right? You're etching more layers. So it's about things we, Lam, Tel do. So we reposition the companies. So if you say, well, how you doing? We're getting the revenue growth pretty well. We'll be up 4.5 points a share in DRAM, 4.5 points in NAND, and in 3D NAND, we're up almost a foundry share. The thing that's given us a... So if you go look at it, I could argue strongly that if you take round numbers, 4% of 8 billion on each, that's 320 million in NAND, 320 million DRAM that we didn't have. And if you go displays up about 200 million, and foundries up, service up a couple hundred million. So you could argue the revenues were up $1 billion if you hadn't covered that. The thing that's hurting us right now is gross margins. Gross margins are a little bit, foundry mix is down a little bit. We have a better mix of tools at foundry for margin, and we have to get the new product gross margins up. So if we get normalized gross margin spending mix with foundry, and we get the new product gross margins up, then you'll see the big leverage from the revenue growth. That was my 8-minute answer to your short question.
How do you guys think about functional integration within the entirety of the manufacturing? You know, you have obviously you have the litho, the dep and etch, metrology, but it seems like some of those functions are getting combined. So, I mean, how do you guys think about sort of your product positioning and sort of moving outside of sort of the core function and maybe absorbing some other steps or other capabilities within the entire manufacturing chain?
You mean the customers?
Yes.
Yeah, so for years, the theory was get a totally integrated solution to customers. Customers don't necessarily want that unless it's an advantage to them. And the reason they're hesitant to do it, they don't want you controlling too much of their process because they think some of that's their IP. And the second thing is, if they can't combine it for a process device advantage, they say, why do it otherwise? So where it tends to have advantages is when you keep the wafer within vacuum and you don't break vacuum and you do multiple steps off a chamber so you don't get oxidation on the surface of the wafer. So as you look at these advanced wafers, it's becoming more interesting to do that for a couple reasons. The requirements for particles, oxidation are getting tougher so that there's a trend to do more of that, but not a super dynamic trend, okay? The second thing is you talked about other things about lithography and stuff like that. If you go look at making chips, there's historically three big buckets of money, right? It's sort of the lithography stuff where you do the mask, the pattern, all that. Then it's the process tools, which is mostly us. And then it's the inspection tools. Once you make it, check it out online or something. Now this making the pattern is two different ways to do it, lithography or patterning. And patterning is about deposition etch. You put multiple patterns down and then put them together, right? Because lithography, the image quality is not good enough. The overlay problems, right? So what's the issue? Would we go into lithography? Pretty hard to visualize. We don't have enough domain experience. Inspection, we're in. Process equipment, we're in. Those are kind of our sweet spots. Our ability to grow will be about getting best tools within a class and also some advantages around putting the tools together. For instance, one of the things that enables our EPI tool is we have an integrated clean solution, which is very good. So there are some benefits to that.
Maybe just back to 3D NAND and the ramp there. You alluded to it before we talked about it versus DRAM. It's obviously going to expect it to be a key driver for wafer spending, you know, this and next year with, I think, current capacity at 15% of the installed base. How do you think the NAND makers are going to drive the balance between the upgrade cycle and maintaining a healthy supply environment?
Well, they're going to have to spend a fair amount for a couple of reasons. One of them is ahead of the others.
Yeah.
And if the first one has a... So it's turning out that the 3D devices work better than 2D.
Okay.
The endurance, retention rate,
right.
It's pretty good.
So the yield, okay.
Early results that I've heard are pretty good.
Okay.
So if one of them is producing a better device for their customers and they get to second generation where the cost curve comes down a lot,
right.
That's a bad competitive dynamic.
Right.
So the customers are pushing them to get to 3D. Because of better device, and they got to get there pretty soon for the customers, and also they don't want to be a big cost disadvantage.
Right.
So I think they're going to do it.
Okay, makes sense. How does Micron Intel's 3D XPoint offering impact your opportunity, your dollar opportunity, given it's easier to scale but uses more exotic deposition
materials? Yeah, I think it's an opportunity for us. It's a similar tool set, CVD etch stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think it's big next year.
Okay.
I think the question you're kind of asking there is, what's the next generation sort of DRAM thing?
Yeah.
So you know, there's a few candidates out there. That's sort of that type of device. Okay. MRAM's kind of a hybrid device between flash and DRAM, right? What you're seeing some of these is more metal steps, more metal deposition steps. So it kind of plays for us. You're putting down metals and you're alternating those things. Right. So how do you deposit them? How do you etch them? Generally, those type of devices play for companies like us.
Okay. Maybe on new products. I know AMAT talked about a couple of high-profile and fast-ramping products at Semicon this year, including Etch and Olympia ALD. VSCA team led by, you know, Gary obviously made a name, I think, in terms of including launching market-changing products around inflection points. What do you think of the above line of the products? What do you think they're game changers kind of long-term?
Oh, I think, so to figure that out, you say, well, what do the computer chips look like?
Yeah.
So for years they were smaller, so go by device. In foundry logic devices, going FinFET, they're going verticals, they get more surface area, they don't have leakage problems. So if your phone, your big problem with your phone, you want a phone that's fast, but you also don't want to kill the battery, right? Especially the display technology, LTPS is a little better than amorphous. But it's about those two things, fast and don't kill the battery. So you go to a FinFET, because it's better power consumption, better performance, more surface area, right? So better contacting. Contacting is becoming a big problem. So what's the point? They will need more deposition etch steps. They'll need more precision. So things like epi, ALD, CVD, etch, things like that are all good things because that's how they'll do those layers. Yeah. The other thing they'll do, they'll probably harden those layers with thermal treatment, so that's RTP. The other thing that's grown a lot in the last couple of years is CMP, because how do you do these devices?
Right.
Okay, so all the things we do are pretty good shape. If you go to VNAND, if you went to a two-dimensional NAND shrink, you'd be down around 10 nanometer, really small devices, the critical dimension. Going vertical, you got more layers, but the hallways or critical dimensions are 40, 50 nanometer, so it's easier to litho, but more layers in deposition etch. So it's all those things we've talked about are growing. So if you get differentiable tools, it's all about can you get the device performance and yield. So if you go look at this, putting down electrons in a small area or materials in a small area, it's crosswave for uniformity, it's precision, it's putting down materials on the sidewalls, vertical structures, precision of CD. And that's what we're doing, ALD, etch, some of the CVD stuff, epi plays for that, 3-5 materials.
Right.
So it's putting down more materials in tighter corners, sidewalls, stuff like that.
Okay. Before I switch over just to financials, any other quick questions?
I don't know anything about financials, just sidewalls and devices.
Maybe let's get into some earnings power. And just, if you know, you talked about $1.70 in earnings at a $30 billion wafer spend, $2.33 in EPS, and they get $37 billion levels by, you know, 2018. It's a significant push out from previous model, which was 20 cents lower and so 2 years earlier. Can you kind of walk us through the puts and takes, the key assumptions and drivers behind mix and gross margins and OpEx and tax rate? And
yeah, so if you go down the model, the revenue line is probably in okay shape. If you go back to the model we gave in 13, if you go to look at the delta, the biggest delta is actually, believe it or not, solar, where we had $400 million in the model, and it's going to be, you know, maybe 100 next year. And that's a, not even a solar business, what's called a web business that's in EES. So you kind of lost $300 million. Now, it's low-margin business, but it was revenue, right?
Right.
The service business is beating the model. Display business pretty close to the model. And equipment, pretty close on the share for 16, I think, particularly if you get good foundry.
Right.
So then I'll come back to gross margins. Tax rate, we're beating the model. Weighted average share count, we're pretty aggressive in the buyback. I think we'll get to the model.
Okay.
OPEX, we were over the model on OPEX, but we're going to come back down, I think. The model was 2228 for next year. Right. We should get close to that. We're a little over that last quarter.
Okay.
So gross margin's the issue.
Yeah.
We said 2016. In 2013, we said 2016 gross margins were going to be 44.5% for the company. That was up from the base year of 40.9 in 2012. So we went 40.9, 2013 we went 42.1, 2014 we went 44.1, then we went downhill in 15. So we're like 43 and change this year. So the issue that's hitting us is the mix mostly. We had a heavier foundry mix versus memory. And it's not, and the issue is there's different tools we sell to foundry versus memory. The same tool to the same customer, similar gross margin. But foundry makes a different mix of tools. So if foundry mix comes back, it's a little easier than the gross margin. So we took down the gross margins a little bit. We went to 44.6, which is moderate improvement from where we are.
Right.
So if we can get normal mix and get the new product margins up, we're okay. And that's the short, intermediate, long-term problem.
Okay. And then maybe just on OPEX, I know you've worked to improve the profitability, reduced OPEX by 500 bips since fiscal 13. It's 28.3% of sales. Can you just walk us through the key changes you made there, you know, in the organization to drive this, and then also maybe touch on how much is left to cut?
Sure. So remember what I said earlier, if you want to make money in our industry, in any industry, first look at, are you in attractive markets? Two, do you have disruptive products in those markets? Three, do you have scale and efficiency to leverage your operating profit in those markets, right? So the first thing we worked on was scale, how to get more efficient in organizations that support those revenues.
Right.
So we hit G&A because we benchmarked it. You can say, are you efficient or not? We said, we can take some money out there and still run the company. So we did a couple hundred million. The other layers of efficiency below the products are some of the field operations. About 25% of the field is infrastructure. About 75% is applications guys that are really like R&D guys, we call them marketing.
Sure.
So we're squeezing that a little bit in the next year. So there's some opportunity there, not huge. The next opportunity that leverages the products, the revenues, are supply chain manufacturing. We're working on that through gross margin initiatives.
Okay.
But it shows up the gross margin line. So then you go up above. So is there spending opportunity? Yeah, there's some spending opportunity. But then you get to spending on products,
right,
where there's an ROI, right? If you invest in a product, you should get a return.
Sure.
So you can cut engineering or you can cut these applications guys in the field, but you won't get an ROI. So for 2 or 3 years, we put money into those products. And we're getting revenue out now. You can sort of see it. The question is, should you have that level of R&D spending, more or less?
Right.
We think we're kind of at the right level, flat, and let the revenues grow, get the return.
So I was going to go next. Like, how do you balance the allocation of R&D dollars, given the major impending technology inflections with FinFET and 3D NAND and 450?
You have to go back all the time, you know, at least sort of every 6 months, but in detail every year, and go look at the markets and say, hey, is this market or this device changing? For instance, if we see in 3 years MRAM or this crossbar thing is really taken off, maybe we need a different tool to solve that problem, right?
Right.
So we're always balancing a portfolio, and we're pretty unemotional about it.
Okay.
But that's what you have to do.
Okay.
Go look at what kind of computer chips they're making.
Right.
Because there's about a 3-year lead time if you really want a new disruptive product.
Sure. You touched on services before, and it seems like AGS is improving. 9% growth in fiscal 14 with nice profitability. You mentioned you think you can achieve 2.5 to 2.6 billion, I think, in revenue in 15. Where do you see that long term as a percentage of sales, and what's driving the growth in services?
Yeah, so in the model for 2018, we said services would get to 3 billion. I think that's a fair guess. If you look at this year, you'd say we'll go up more than that. This year, we're up for a few reasons. One, we're getting a higher capture rate on the service stuff because we're providing more valuable and cost-effective solutions to customers. The second thing is that buried in there is 200 millimeter tool sales, and those are up.
Right.
And three, it's a good utilization year for fabs, right? So they're buying more parts.
Okay.
I think that our capture rate will continue to go up. I'm a little worried that the 200 millimeter tool sales slows down a little bit.
Okay.
Because there's only so many you can fix in the universe.
Sure.
So I think the $3 billion is probably a reasonable estimate. I think the percentage of total revenues probably stays about flat because even though service is up, we project that the equipment business is going to go up too.
Sure. Any other questions from the audience? Keep going. Okay. Then maybe just on display.
After they've had 3 cups of coffee, they'll do more work for you.
Yeah, come back this afternoon. It appears to shift to lower gross margin 4K, you know, just on display, and use the LTPS and OLED mix for mobility could be a permanent headwind for gross margins. How can AMAT address this long term through product offerings or cost reductions, and why does display make sense for AMAT strategically?
Sure. So if you go look at, I'm sorry for coughing. If you go look at display, for we sell display equipment to make displays. So for years, the vast majority of the equipment we sold was for TV displays. So remember, we sell surface area. If more TVs are sold, that's good for us. If more big TVs with bigger surface area are sold, that's big, good for us. Yeah. And if they make TVs with more layers underneath the surface, that's good for us.
Sure.
So for years it was TVs, and the big driver was how many TVs they sold, and that was about it, if they're a little bigger. So for years TVs were lumpy, and they grew about 1 inch diagonally per year. But what's happened in recent years is there's a big growth in non-TV displays. Phones, iPads are growing a lot. So the number of layers in phones and iPads is 50 to 100% more than your TV. Wow. So that if you look at next year, over 70% of our display equipment revenues are for small displays, not TVs.
Right.
So that the good news is there's a new market for display equipment, not just TVs.
Sure.
So it gives us a greater addressable market and a less cyclical market.
Right.
Okay. The second thing within TVs, TVs are getting more complex. They're adding layers.
Sure.
And they're getting bigger by almost 2 inches a year.
Okay.
So the display market is generally bigger for equipment and a little less lumpy. So then you say, well, does display make sense for Applied? I think it does. A lot of the technologies is the same as the semi-technologies, PVD, CVD. We don't make etch, but it's etch tools. It's the same technology,
yeah.
Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, if you take the volatility out and you reduce your fixed cost structures, sure. It's an okay business. And generally in that industry, you get a deposit with the order, so the
right.
Cash flows a little better too.
Okay, that makes sense.
So it works.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, Bob, appreciate the, I think unfortunately we're out of time, but I really appreciate you just coming today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.